LexCoachMike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, you are the best. Man, special thanks to our buddies at Crossover. You guys are amazing. Just finished looking at a film of a game we lost. We should have won. Had four broken clears in the fourth quarter. Bingo. Look at the Crossover tape. Shows me just the failed clears. Guys, check this out. Let these guys do the indexing for you. It's a lot more accurate than you might expect. Love it. Anyway, this is our third podcast. One of the most popular coaches on our site, Coach Albert Ricci. Man, 10th season at Army seems hard to believe with the legacy of coaches they have. On our site, you know, the Albert Ricci one-on-one drills are still some of the most popular. I love his terminology. They're scoring drills, not shooting drills. He plays a 10-man defense, talking about game management, situational stuff. This is a great podcast. Got all kinds of drills as well as some wonderful philosophical thoughts. We're going to feature in the article section the 29 drill, so pay attention to that. Come back, check it out. Thank you, Crossover. Thank you, Coach Albert Ricci. Without further ado, thank you, Premium Guys. Love you to death.
Hey. Lax Coach Mike here, laxcoachmike.com. One of your favorites, one of my favorites. Back with us again, Coach Albert Ricci from Army. Coach, thanks so much.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, you know, you were on in 2009, and you complained that we shouldn't wait 3 years. You were on in 2012, complained that we shouldn't wait 3 years. Although the 2012 interview, you were awesome, man. I mean, you're going to have to work really, really hard to even come close to that. I mean, you just absolutely killed it on that interview. And we promised we wouldn't wait 3 years, and here it is, 2015 again. Anyway, man, I am so thrilled that you're here.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me, and hopefully keep getting better with age here.
Well, this is usually where the coaches say all kinds of nice things about our site, so I can just sit here and wait if you want.
Well, I'll tell you what. What you're doing is phenomenal for the growth of lacrosse. You know, I find myself on it and just gathering ideas and you know, the John Wooden quote, the most important things you learn is after you know it all. So, you know, I think it's very helpful for people in this business that have been in it for a long, long time, to gather new and fresh ideas, as well as, you know, people at all levels, youth and all the way up through college, just to gain, a little more insights and take, some things off your site and tailor it to their own needs. So, great job. Keep it up. And, hopefully our little talk here can, help add to, an already expansive, a group of drills and coaching hints for everyone.
Yeah, I don't really see where I can get any better than that, man. Maybe we ought to just sign off.
Got it.
Listen, you know, I tell people all the time, I mean, I love you so much. I mean, you're that unique blend of comprehensive planning with a willingness and an openness to consider change. For the listeners that maybe, you know, weren't listening in the years gone by, I mean, in the last year or so, as our members know, Coach, I mean, we've really seen guys play games with the order of practice and moving around the 10v10. Man, you were doing that back in 2012, you know, and, I think it was, once a week or every other week or anyway, intermittently, you know, you would, put the guys through the stick work, the dynamic stretching, and then right into an overtime game to get the blood flowing and then back in. Awesome stuff. I also know that, you're kind of a student of the previous year's statistics and then you, kind of modify the practice plans and the drills and I can tell you, Coach Albert Ricci, the season template for drills is set long before Christmas Day. So, that's kind of the guy he is. But I want to go back to that, and maybe I'll start, okay?
Sure.
When we talked before, Coach, one of the, and I don't even want to say concerns, but one of the observations that you came out of after the 2012 season, or maybe it was 2011 season, was the shots on goal percentage and how you were going to increase shooting in practice. And it's kind of a metaphor, but it's also real, you know, to improve that. And you said, we've got some lofty goals, okay? And I was really anxious to hear what they were, you know, and it wasn't just you, but it was your opponents. And one of the things you said to me was, and said to us, was, boy, if we could hold the opponents under 22%, or if we could shoot 33 to 35%, okay? And I went back and listened to the other interviews in preparation, and I look at your stats for this year, and I see the opponents, you know, are pretty close to 25, 26%. I mean, that's phenomenal, and you guys are 6.25 or 625 shooting percentage, getting those shots on goal and so on and so forth. You got to be happy with that, don't you?
Yeah, right now, you know, right now we are.
Coach, sure. Yeah, I understand that.
Oh, did I lose you here, Mike?
No, I'm here. I was going to say, okay. You're as happy as a coach gets. I mean, I know you're, you know, you're always looking for better and satisfied and everything, but, yeah, those are big numbers, Coach. That looks really good.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a direct function of how we practice, you know, with a lot of emphasis in our scoring game. It starts a little simple thing, like, you know, we no longer call it shooting. Everything we do is scoring. So, there's a difference. There's a difference there. And so, you know, when it's Husky scoring, it's not Husky shooting. It's we scoring instead of we shooting. So just our different drills, you know, we put that emphasis in on that and then dedicate some time to some specifics within those scoring drills. But then, you know, really try to combine stick work and other types of drills that give us additional shots, you know, give us additional opportunities to score the ball. So, you know, that I think is helped us. You know, obviously, probably the biggest thing is having good players, and the next part of it is the repetition, and then the other side of it defensively is just a pride in defending and keeping people from scoring, and that is something that permeates our organization and goes beyond just the defensive personnel. The attackmen have a piece in that. The face-off people have a piece in that. You know, all the way up and down, we really look at ourselves as, a 10-man defense. And so, you know, it's nice that right now it's working out for us in terms of percentages. And, you know, the most important piece is the win percentage. And we're doing okay there now. So hopefully we can keep that going.
So is some of that an influence back from your Pressler days? From talking to Coach, we know, you know, how he charted the shots, and I think it was one year we talked to you where you had somebody edit down every goal for you and every goal against you. My point is, where guys are focusing a lot, you know, on, you know, the defense and kind of more lifting the hands, I guess, now than or getting ahead of the stick in there than they are throwing checks and, you know, spend a lot of time on footwork and where your hands are when you shoot. You guys seem to put just as high as emphasis, and I don't think I've heard it as strongly as I heard it from you, except when we talked to Coach Pressler, in where they're shooting on the field, you know, and where the spots are where they can shoot, not just offensively, but defensively.
Unquestionably, that is the biggest part of it. You know, we're
I did some serious homework for this interview, man. I hope you're picking up on this.
Yes, you have. We have probably this season more than any other, just really put that emphasis on hammering the middle of the field, getting in between the hashes. We've been blessed with some really gifted outside shooters, and Garrett Thule, who, you know, was with us for 4 years. John Buster is currently with us, and they can bring it for some distance. You know, the rest of us really, you know, we're working on getting ourselves between those hashes and into the paint, which for us is defined by the hashes and 12 yards and in. Not only that, but just body position when you're shooting the ball and making certain that we're coming down back towards the cage as opposed to away from the goal. And in all of our shooting drills, those are the things that we're practicing. Those are the skills that we're not only teaching, but trying to emphasize on every rep and to get it so that in those few opportunities that you may have, those two, three, four opportunities that a MIDI might have in a game, that he's in best position to fall back on his training and get positive results.
Yeah, and like I said, even when I go back and listen to the coaches, and I think I have a pretty good feel for what makes them tick, you know, after doing this for 5 years and 115 hours of podcasts and all that, when I was listening to the stuff before, I'm, you know, just almost melancholy, you know, going, man, we just, you know, we really got to put cones out there, even when we're running 4v4 and tell our defense, okay, you know, anywhere outside of this cone is okay. Inside of this cone is not okay. And focus on the position. I mean, and I think everybody talks about make him go to the alley, stick on the high side. I mean, all that's like great, great fundamental stuff. But for you, when I was listening to it before, again, I just, you know, took me back to the Pressler podcast on how important that is.
Yeah, from a defense perspective, Mike, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, just again, comes back to the 10-man defense, and we're always talking about like making our goalie a player, you know, and you make a goaltender a player by giving him shots that he's got potential to save. If he's getting the stuff down his throat, he's just not going to be a player for you. It's not going to happen. Maybe he steals one or two, but, that's the idea is just, let's make the goaltender a player. And the best way to do that is just keep him outside the paint.
Joe, I don't think I've heard you use the phrase 10-man defense before. Tell me what you're talking about there.
Well,
I know.
Yeah, in a 10-man defense, basically, is what we're trying to get across. Everybody has a responsibility for holding our opponent down in their scoring. So, you know, basically, a lot of times, I think the emphasis can be simply on the six or seven people who are playing defense at the time, including the goalie. And certainly they bear a huge responsibility defensively, but try to get it beyond that. And this is what I mean by that, with our attackmen, managing the game, understanding, you know, and using football terms, the down and distance, you know what's happening. How long did we just play defense? You know, what's the score of the game? What's left in the clock? You know, what does the situation call for in terms of my decisions on the offensive end? Another responsive, and we look at that as a defensive type of thing. You know, so when we have it and they don't, they're not going to score. It's as simple as that. So then it turns to their riding game and taking pride in the effort of riding. You know, if you're really successful at this level in riding, you're still only getting it back 3 times out of 10, and you're extremely successful if you're doing that. So we really put the emphasis on the effort. You know, make certain that every time you've got the opportunity to make a turn, to make the clearing team make an extra pass, you know, that's a win. Those are the type of things that help us get into a settled D. And then we turn it over to the midfield we do run defense in mid-middies, but we train our midfielders, on all of the defensive skills and ingrain them in the defensive game plan. But it starts with, on the offensive end, making sure that they get back and not give, our opponents numbers, you know, cut the field in half. Make sure when you're subbing that intelligent subbing, and if you can't, you know, we've trained you to play defense. So you know, hunker down and do that. So they have a responsibility to our face-off guys. Obviously, we want to win, but we don't want to give up any offense out of that situation. And then across the board, everybody has a responsibility for penalty reduction, so that we're not putting teams into a extra man situation. You know, and now, you know, it's no longer 10 man. You only have 9. That's where it kind of goes across trying to develop a defensive mentality, amongst your whole team. And that's how we do it. And, you know, a lot of it is, is certainly through my voice and giving, expressing the importance of it and the importance for us to be successful. And then, you know, the other side is just drilling it and drilling, you know, certain scrimmage situations, drilling, riding, you know, riding piece, drilling scramble situations that force our middies to get back into the hole and match up. So, you know, there's the two parts to it, but when you look at us and what we've done, quite well the last couple of years, statistically speaking anyway, that, you know, last year we led the nation in goals against. This year we're I believe number two. I'm not positive of that, but you know we've done that, which is great, and that's the end game on the defensive end. But another, what I think is equally impressive with the statistics, is just that our goaltenders over the last 2 to 3 years have ranked from 60 to 69 in saves per game. Now their save percentages have been very high, but what that tells me is that everybody's invested on the defensive end.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not good defense. That everybody has played a role in limiting the number of shots that end up our goalie ends up having to see. So, you know, long winded saying is just how we feel like.
No, man, but you're
victorious.
You
know,
that's back our way. 783 on opponent's clearing percentage, which is
right.
10 percentage points or so, 8 to 10 lower than the national average. Goals per game, 6.55. And again, you know, I look at that 6.55 and I'm immediately taken back in my mind to reducing the quality of shots from the opponents, you know, not just 6.55, but I mean, you're successful in getting those shots where you want them taken, in many, many cases, you know, on the field. And you brought up, I didn't even look at penalty minutes when I was looking at your stats, 27 for the season after, 11 games to Tate. Man, that's a good number too.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, listen, I'm not opposed to winning the game 15 to 14. You know, I don't have a problem with that. I just want one more than the opponent.
It just seems that defensively,
or at least here, getting it done on the defensive end is something that fits us a little bit better.
Yeah, the fact that you're so open-minded and flexible about how you win is one of the things that makes you great. Hey, listen, you know, we struggle. You know, I'm helping with a Christian Academy here in Atlanta this year, and we're playing like 8 sophomores, man. And, you know, I think transition coaches always have a hard time balancing the situational awareness and the acumen. You hear that, acumen, coach? The situational acumen on the offensive end. When you made reference to the attackman, absolutely understanding the scenario and the situation, I'm sure that there's a lot of verbal coaching and covered in meetings and all that kind of stuff. But is that, are you teaching that through, and obviously you got a tremendously high caliber young man that you're coaching, both character and intelligence-wise there. But at the end of the day, should we be spending more time running scramble drills, saying, okay, there's 5 minutes left and we're winning by 3. I mean, is that the thing that you're doing to reinforce that?
Yeah, we really do spend a lot of time on that, particularly in the preseason. But we will have a segment each week, and we just call it our victory segment. And we're fortunate enough to practice in a place that has a clock, you know, where everybody sees, where the stadium. So I know that that's not for everyone, but we do put everything on the clock. And then in these scenarios, you know, I'll just paint the scenario. Hey, we're down by 1, you know, we're up by this number. Here's the amount of time. It's before halftime. It's before, at the end of the game type of scenario. Or, hey, we're up 3 with the ball. With a minute and a half in the third quarter. You know, so how do we work this clock down so that we don't get a stall call and we're going to end up with the ball on our end. You know, hopefully we score. If we don't score, at least it's not crossing the midfield, and we're gonna go into the fourth quarter with a 3-goal lead. So we call them our victory situations, and we spend a lot of time on that. And we've lost our fair share of 1-goal games, but it's been the best way for us to really try and teach those scenarios. And you can't cover them all, but you try to make up as many as you can, and hopefully. When you get into that tight situation in the game, they'll fall back on their training and be able to execute, the way you talked about practice.
You doing that every day, Coach?
Not
every day.
Not at this time of year. In the preseason, I would say we'd go 4 out of 5 days. There'd be some sort of victory situation, you know, some sort of scenario, maybe at a tail end of a scrimmage or. You hit on it earlier, open up practice with an overtime scrimmage, you know, just something along those lines that had to do with the clock, you know, something that had to do with the clock. One of the things that, in a real basic form, and it had nothing to do with scores, but we would go transition. We like this transition to 6-on-6. So, everything that we do, Mike, because we're such a big team, we have 58 guys on the team, we have to do back-to-back or in the smaller group sessions, we end up doing on 3 or 4 cages, because I'm one of my biggest, the probably biggest thing to me in practice is energy, you know, and the best way to keep energy is to keep everybody involved. So, but to give you a little drill that we would do is transition to, 66. So simply we'd line everybody up. The incoming D middies would be carrying the ball. Offensive middies would be, trailing the play or running side by side. And they would come in from the opposite restraining box or even the midfield line. It doesn't really matter. So now you play out your transition scenario. You can create 4-on-3, 5-on-4. You can make it whatever you want. Just even 5-on-5s and try to work through that. And then you go right through to your subbing game and then right into 6-on-6. So it's just trying to mesh your various areas. I think a lot of times you end up working transition, you know, and then you move on and then it's 6-on-6. So now we're trying to mesh a couple different things to include our subbing game. And then, we put 2 minutes on the clock. So they play that scenario for 2 minutes. So if the offensive guys score, then they just run to the end line and they go get another ball. And it's like, how many times can you score? If they throw it away, the defensive team clears it to the midfield line. Once they clear the ball to the midfield line, they just drop the ball. Somebody picks it up, you know, whistle blows real quick, and you almost got another little scramble situation of which, you got to match up and get into your 6-on-6 defense. You have to probe offensively to try and, you know, see if those numbers could work for you, and then you get into your 6-on-6 set. So you play it through, the clock continues to run for those 2 minutes, but as you get down towards the end, you know, you're playing against the clock, defensively, you know, that, they could go kamikaze on you, because they've got nothing to lose with 9-10 seconds. They're gonna, you know, blast their way to the goal, so we've gotta be, cognizant of that, and then, you know, offensively, you're looking up, and again, there's not a score, but you are playing against that clock and knowing that, hey, let's get that shot, or let's get the quality shot in before the buzzer goes. So, you know, just a little way to combine a lot of different parts of our game and the game management piece.
Well, and pretty good conditioning there, too.
No doubt. 2 minutes is a long time. And then we've got it going back to back now with a bigger team. So you know we'll line, if you can picture this, we'll line, you know, 6 guys up at the midfield line, 1 on the box side and 1 on the other, you know, opposite the box, and then they go in to the respective areas.
Right.
So So they go into, you know, so we're, our color jerseys are black and white. So, you know, you've got black going in to play offense on one end, and then you've got black going in to play defense on the other end. And, you know, you play out those 2-minute scenarios, and then the middies flip over, you know, so now you don't have to change your colors. You just go to the other side, and your whole job changes. And, no doubt about it, the conditioning aspect of that is terrific, because it keeps people going, and you may go of a 3-time sequence. You've already played offense and defense, you know, once. It's like you go twice, sit once, type of thing. So, it teaches you to play defense tired.
Yeah, quick question. Let's say the ball goes on the ground and the D clears it to midfield. Just so the listeners understand, you're coming back to that same end of the field, kind of a counterattack.
Exactly. So they get it to the midfield, they drop it, you know, right there. You know, you just coach whistle blows, drop it, meaning, hey, you cleared it. And now whoever's closest just picks it up. And of course, you're spread out a little bit because you've cleared the ball. And, you know, now that guy picks it up and they're going right back into that end again in an attempt to score. So you've got that little unsettled situation. You have a matchup that is so important from a defensive perspective and often overlooked. Just making sure they can match up and you're ready to defend. You're in and organized. If there's, as I said, the offense probes, and if there's nothing there, then they got a quick, you know, then they're moving into their settled game of whatever offensive calls there are.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. And for the high school and the rec guys, you know, if you're worried about having a 19-man or a 25-man roster, you know, it's not quite as beneficial as a 6v6, but you could run that with 2 attackmen and 2 poles down there, you know, and play it out like a 5v5. You can still run your plays or your motion or whatever you're doing to a great degree, you know, with the 5v5 if you don't have that many guys on the roster. But, I love drills like this, and we all.
You know what, Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt. I agree with you 100%. You know, you can do that with any type of numbers. One of the things I really like about it is there's a penalty for throwing the ball away. You know? I mean, you got to ride. I mean, I think a lot of times it's a 6-on-6, and we're guilty of this much as anything.
Yeah, right.
It's that, you know, hey, the ball goes out of bounds, and then the offensive guys just go ahead and get it back. Now, hey, you're making it clear to the midline, and now it's, there's a penalty to it, you know? You no longer get to play offense, even if it's for that brief time, but at least there becomes more meaning to it, and I think it brings a little more energy and focus to what you're doing.
Well, and we're a huge proponent on the site, Joe, of, you know, counterattack drills, because I think it's extremely realistic, especially at the high school and the rec level. You know, it's a long story, but I mean, the short version is a lot of our listeners find themselves in scenarios a couple days a week where maybe they can only practice on half a field because the girls are on the other half, you know.
Sure.
If it's per field and the grass fields are wet or whatever that turns out to be. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the benefits of counterattack drills and coming back. And, you know, one of the idiosyncrasies, this happened to me too, you know, when I was first at McIntosh. You know, you look at the film, we clear the ball great to midfield, but we couldn't maintain possession with the attack. You know, and you're going like, what's the problem? Well, the problem is we never practice it, you know?
right, yeah.
Our roster
was
so small, we considered it clear, you know, when the guy got over the midfield line, you know?
Right.
And the thing I love about this is, you know, you can change it up, man. It could be a 4v3 with the comparable numbers trailing. It could be a 5v4. It could be a 5v3. You know, and then have those guys trail after a brief whistle to get into your 6v6, or if you're modifying it into the 6v5. No, man, it's really, really good stuff. I love that drill. And we run those drills a lot of times at the end of practice instead of running.
Yeah.
Maybe you can make the guys run, you know, 6 sideline to sidelines, and, you know, the winner only runs down and back or something. But, good stuff. Coach, have you stayed pretty consistent with the changes that you had made and the variations in the practice plans? I mean, kind of the stick work, the stretch, sometime into a scrimmage, and that portion of practice is where you would often if I remember correctly, vary the order and the drills. And then you would come right into the, you know, we talked a lot about 3v2 tight drills, and we're seeing a lot of interesting variations on that now, Joe. You know, guys traditionally have run that front to back and back to front, and I think over the last 2 years, you know, much more side to side, you know, putting cones up from the center of the crease, and we call it crunching on the site. Everybody kind of has their own word. Got an interesting one from Colfer at Cabrini, where he put the cones just inside the hash marks. And okay. He crunched the field just on that inside rectangle, if you will,
mm-hmm.
which was a good reinforcement for, like what you said, about not letting the guys get off the shot in there. Of course, you know, if you're playing 3v2 and the drill is rocking and rolling, I mean, you know, quick whistles and guys in and out, you know, they're getting shots off in there. But, man, I love that one.
Yeah, let me give you a little another variation of that if it's okay with you here. I'm not sure. Is that okay?
You're like the legendary coach at Army, and I'm like the old back club coach in Atlanta, and you're asking me for permission and affirmation. I think we know each other better than that.
Well, one of the things that we've picked up is we, of course, got to give it a West Point game. We call it Grant Passing. After Ulysses S. Grant, one of West Point's former grads. But what we've done is we'll take a box, okay, we put the cones, it's a 12 by 12, and if you can think of, if you're using a football field, it goes from the football 45, okay, to the football 33, and inside the hashes. So that gives you roughly about a 12 by 12 box, okay? Then we pull the cages back 5 yards, so they're at the football 5, you know, 5 yards below what the normal crease is. And we'll put one defender and one offensive person in front of the goal. Then the 3v2 actually takes place in that box. Okay?
Yeah.
And so now we got a little 3v2 going on in there, and it's really a stick work drill more than anything else. A short passing game, the use of stick fakes, the use of eye manipulation, head manipulation, you know, by where you're looking to try and look off a defender. And it's 3v2, and so it's great, great stick work. We force everybody to use their outside hand, so that gets you changing hands all the time. So within that box, you have to have your stick to the outside, you have to pass to the outside, you have to catch it to the outside. And again, it forces that. So that's the offensive side of it. The defensive side of it is you've got the two guys in there, and we call them nuggets. Anytime you tip a pass.
Knockdown pass in Army for the listeners.
Those are our nuggets. And we put a huge emphasis on that because we're not a takeaway team. That's not what we do. But one of the ways you take force turnovers is to try and get nuggets. You know, knock one
down.
Yeah,
I think we actually wrote up the nugget drill, maybe for lax power or something.
So now we're 3v2 in there, and it is high energy. I mean, it is bang, 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 balls moving, you know, great communication. The guys are excited when they get that nugget. You know, we kind of try to celebrate that piece. So you'll do that, I would say, for probably, it depends how the ball, you know, how well the passing is going, but I would say 20 to 30 seconds. You're in there and you're just in that box. You're just banging that ball around and you've got two guys trying to chase you. And again, if you want a bigger box because your skills aren't as good, then go ahead and use a bigger box. The better your skills, the tighter the box that can be. So this is long sticks. We'll handle the ball in there, you know, as well as attackmen will play defense. Everybody plays everything. So 20 to 30 seconds. And then what we do is a coach will blow a whistle, and on the whistle, those five guys will go towards the goal. And you already have the one offensive player, one defensive player down there, and that creates a 4v3. So that leads right into a 4v3, and then as soon as those guys are going 4v3, the next group jumps into the box. And again, we got a big team. So we've got it going in both directions at the same time. You know, one side, the offense is attacking the goal. The white is attacking the goal. The other side, the black, is attacking the goal. So now you've got people who are handling the ball and trying to get the nuggets on both ends. But, you know, it's a real fast-paced drill for us, kind of combines a bunch of different things, both offensively and defensively, and I like the end part. There's a culmination piece as we go down to, you know, what usually tends to be a 4-on-3 down at the goal. So I don't know if I articulated that well enough. Can you picture what I'm talking about, Mike?
Yeah, actually, I can't remember. We have that drill on the website. Under
okay,
the,
perfect. All right.
No. I got a couple of questions, Joe. If for the listeners, if you want to see that drawn up in the search box, just put night drill. I can't remember who gave it to us, but I know when we wrote it up, like I got an email like a week later from Kyle Hannon. He was watching a JUCO practice on a guy he was recruiting, and I'm trying to think of the name of the JUCO, but the coach went, "Oh man, we got this drill off last Coach Mike," you know, and now that he's down here, you know. Mercer's an hour from my house, you know. So I know Kyle pretty well. And Kyle's laughing. He's going, "Yeah, the guy's bragging to me about your website and this drill." Anyway, couple of questions. The configuration we have on the site, the guys on the four corners, or excuse me, the three guys on the box, Joe, they're running that four corner almost like the old traditional passing drill, you know, where you have to go to the next cone and then roll back and then next rep maybe throw across your body or stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've been keeping those guys outside the box. Are you actually letting those, the keep away in the box, in essence, are you letting those guys inside the box, or are they outside
the box? Yeah, we want them inside the box. In fact, we're yelling at them if they step outside the box because, you know, now they're giving themselves an unfair advantage. So we don't, and the ball doesn't have to continue to rotate in the same direction. You know, we're our emphasis is on, like, the stick fake, the eye manipulation, so, you know,
so it's more of a true keep away in the box.
No doubt. Exactly. Yeah. Keep away in the box. Three versus two, keep away in the box into a 4v3. And then we get it going in both directions we get it going in both directions. So, you know, everybody's playing both offense and defense.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I love the twist of, just having your team line up and count them off 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Isn't it funny? You know, every time I go to a new team and I want to do this, you know, with everybody playing O&D, I have to line up and count off 1-2, 1-2 like we did in my gym classes 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And you tell the kids to count off, coach, they got no idea what you're talking about.
Right, right.
So I put them line up and count off so we can, you know, all the attack here, all the middies and the poles, so we can get an even distribution of white and black, you know. And you just say count off, and they're looking at you like you're Chinese, you know. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, yeah, I guess my relic dinosaur tendencies are coming out in spades, you know.
Well, those that counting off and sounding off is alive and well here at the United States Military Academy, not only on the lacrosse field, but in everything. So you may be a throwback, but it's right in line with what we're doing here, Mike. So keep it going.
Isn't that funny, you know? And I took a piece out of the old, I don't want to digress from the podcast, but, you know, we ran into an interesting podcast with Danowski where the kids came in sheepishly to ask him a question, and he was kind of freaking, and or not freaking, but had a bunch of anxiety. You know, when your captain came in and closed the door, you know, I think every coach is going like, oh, crap, you know. They wanted to play the music, you know, during the shooting drills, which they had done while he was gone without him knowing. And long story short, you know, they very sheepishly got up their courage and said, "We want to talk to you about this." And coach is going like, "Okay, what's this all about?" And, you know, he says he was trying not to let his face reveal how relieved he actually was when he found out what the conversation was about, you know. And so he sat back in the chair with his stone man face, you know. Can't you just see Danowski rubbing his chin thinking about this, right? And, he leans back in the chair and he says, "Well, okay, I'll agree to that on a trial basis with one condition." And the captains are all relieved, you know, that the anxiety has now died down in the conversation. And they're going, "Yeah, what's that?" He said, "My playlist." And I said, "Okay, here's the podcast question of a century. I mean, Kurt Kucinich got nothing on me, man, you know." I felt like, okay, what's Coach Danowski's playlist, you know, and he listens to a lot of Little Feet, you know, and stuff like that. Anyway, so this team I'm helping out with now, man, they were playing this music, sounded like spa music, you know, had like bell, I mean, I don't know what it was. I said, "We got to change the music," you know, and they're going, "Well, at the Christian school, they're not allowed to, I mean, as you can imagine, the music selections have to go through like 9 screening processes, you know.
Right, right.
And my buddy, the coach, John Hunter, great Christian guy. You know, he says, well, I prefer just to play music without words. That way I never have to worry about it, you know.
Cover your bases.
And the kids are all coming up to me going, Coach Mike, I just got to know, what would you play? And I said, man, I'd be playing the Allman Brothers. I'd be playing Government Mule. And the kids are looking at me like, who's the Allman Brothers?
Not in Georgia, like, nonetheless.
Yeah, in Georgia, nonetheless. I mean, what is the problem with this country, you know? Anyway. Let's get back to the practice plan. So we went through that short stuff, and man, I listened to the last podcast. I did not write up the 29 drill. I've got to get that posted on our site somewhere, and if we have time, maybe we'll come back to it. But then
okay.
You kind of go to some full field, maybe back to after your full field, back into some transition or those kind of drills, and then, you know, potentially still some scrimmaging at the end. Are you still in that kind of basic format, Coach?
You know, try to mix it up. Try to mix it up and change, you know, the location of some things. And basically, it takes on a couple forms after we attack the fundamentals early in practice. That's almost a given every single day. And even in how we try to do that, it varies. You know, every so often we want to throw in station work. I grabbed this from Penn and Mike Murphy. You know, they call it 4x5. So we'll take four skills and 5 minutes of each one of those drills,
right.
and you know, roll them through. So you know, that's one way of attacking it. Another time, just hey, here's the sticker, here's our ground ball, here's our scoring, those sort of things. But then from that point, we try to vary it a little bit as far as what we're going to attack first. So if it's going to be more of a full field portion, you know, we'll build up to that where we may do our Omaha drill, which is a full field, I don't want to call it scramble, but where you'll have a variety of things or a last touch, that type of thing. And then it's into a ride clear, it's a team face off, into scrimmaging. And then we would come back to the even situations where it might be a 4v4 or some sort of even type of drill. And then from that into our 6-on-6. Or we'd flip it, you know, where we would build up even wise, where maybe it's individual work. Into a 1-on-1, into a 4v4, into 6v6, and then after the 6-on-6, we hit it and go to the full field. So just try to mix that up a little bit through the week, so it's not so regimented. You know, I know I expressed to you before, I've got a whole suite of different drills that we do. To try and introduce
variety.
Yeah, we've
been arguing over who had a favorite drill book, you or me and my site. Yeah, you said you had like, I can't remember, 200 or something, you know.
That might be high. I don't know that we're using all 200 of them, but, you know, we try to vary it up and, you know, attack the same skills, but try to do it in a few different ways. And you know, just to keep things fresh for our guys. When you're keeping it fresh, guys tend to be more excited, more enthusiastic, and you know, above and beyond any type of drill that you do. You know, it's the energy and the focus that you put towards the drill that means more than the actual drill itself. So you know, trying to coach that motivation every day is the biggest thing that I do, and then trying to get that energy focused towards.
Well, you said something.
Getting better.
You said something repeatedly that I want to make sure it doesn't get lost. You know, I mean, traditional coaches, and I run into this all the time at coaches' clinics in the Q&A. You know, I'm coaching U15. You know, I'm coaching JV. I'm coaching a high school team that's a fourth-year program. You know, I'm coaching what we call it on the site, 1.5 coaches. You know, the coach and the social studies teacher. No offense to the social studies teacher. And they're saying, you know, we've got to stay in progression. You know, I mean, we've got to run our 3v2, our 4v3, and we build up from there. And I think 5 or 6 years ago, that was kind of the norm, you know. Now, I think that actually going 6v6 back into 4v4 or going 5v4 back into 3v2, you may want to start with 3v2 with a younger team because it's got the fundamentals, right? You slide out and you'll cover and all that. But at the end of the day, I think the kids handle it a lot better than the coach's mentality thinks they'll handle it, you know. And the game is so fluid, you know, changing the order of the drills and not going in progression, I am a firm believer, prepares your team in many ways to be more successful due to the fluid nature of the game.
I think that's a really valid point, very good one, you know, and one in which, helps for the flow of the game in which there's a lot of quick changes. A lot of things that were happening in the first quarter aren't happening in the second quarter and vice versa and so on throughout the game. And, you know, I think that approach is a very valid one.
Coach, are you still, in love with the 29 drill?
We do it, particularly in any team that we know is going to, do a lot of picking, which is a huge part of the game. I love it just from the standpoint it just gives us, you know, the repetition of just constantly doing it and getting that pick into it. And then there's a culmination piece to it in which now you get to the unsettled and
culmination piece? Culmination piece?
Well, you want to always have a drill, but it's for something or ends in something, you know. It's just probably why we don't do a lot of like just straight up stick work because there's no culmination piece to it until the whistle blows and then it's over. You want to have it end in something. Somebody's going to be victorious. And when you're competing that way, you're going to get a little more out of them.
I'm still trying to figure out how many of my listeners even know what culmination means. You know, I'm sitting here trying to Google Merriam-Webster while I'm talking to you.
Don't Google it too hard. I'm probably using the word wrong.
Coach, you were running that drill behind.
Yes.
I started to play some games running it at the box, too.
Mm-hmm.
At the top restraining line because we started to see, you know, I don't know. I mean, some people, you know, call it like a Duke weave almost. It's really not a weave.
Yep.
It's a cut under. I know Jamie Monroe pitches that as well. You know, the middies are running, you know, a guy just passes the ball and then cuts under and passes. And it's kind of a lull you to sleep drill, really, is what it is.
Sure.
So they can see somebody. But, you know, we do run into teams that are running that with a pick and slip. We're coming up on it, man, but I love this drill so much. And I didn't write it up, and I want to get it written up. Can you run us through that real quick?
Sure. So the 29 drill, what it is, this is basically it's a 2v2 drill in which there's a pick set, and you play through that pick. Now, you know how you do that. If you're a switching team, then you switch it. If you're trying to play through, you know, you're teaching the technique that you want. Now, so let's if we're drawing it up, if we start the ball on say 5 yards above goal line, and just inside the box. So you've got a ball with a defender on it, and then you put another person at X behind with a defender on him. You allow that pass to be thrown from the wing to X. So there's no contesting of that. That just happened. And now you're coaching the offensive player to set up the pick. You know, don't just throw it and run behind it. You know, throw it, fake a front swing, plant, come back, set the pick on the ball. And now you've created that communication that the defense has to have. And this is great for the, you know, big, still with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry, I just heard a beep. So now the ball is thrown to X, and it becomes a two-man game. And based on where the pick is set, you know, we do different things defensively, and it can be even with matchups. So the pick's set, and now you play through that, and as long as it's successfully through, that the person who had the ball, or excuse me, who carried the ball through the pick, will turn and roll out and throw the ball back to X. Okay, to the
so
person.
So it's like a flip.
Yeah, you know, he picks and then he pick and pop. So he picks and then he pops back to X. So he'll drive up and he'll roll and throw the ball back to X. Okay? Now, this is where the next piece comes into. There is a third offensive player that is located on the hashes or, you know, outside the hashes on the opposite side of the goal. And he is uncovered. He's uncovered. So once the ball goes back to X, we'll play the ball for half a second, and then we retreat to our pipes. So the two defenders will get onto the pipes, and then that man at X will attack either side, and it becomes a 3-on-2 with that third offensive uncovered player. So now, you know, now we're teaching a whole other aspect of trying to play two defensively and buying time and invading guys. As well as from an offensive perspective, we're teaching that draw and dump, you know, really attack somebody from behind and the use of your eyes, the use of your stick fake to create a passing angle to that person, that you're looking to throw the ball to. So it becomes a little 3-on-2 from behind. So we get the aspect of the picking game, the communication that involves and get to coach up the finer points of setting picks as well as playing through picks. And then you get that, once again, I'll use again that culmination piece because it's going to end up in a 3-versus-2 and the ball's going to get knocked to the ground and scooped up by the D or they're going to get a shot in a, or, you know, goal save. And then after that goes, it's the next group. So it's a great early practice drill, because it's, you know, again, you're working on that pick game, and you're getting that pick work.
Yeah, and for the listeners, man, we used to run. I was telling Coach before a couple years ago. We used to run that with three guys across the end line, and the third guy couldn't enter from the end line. You know, but what happens if you run it that way? And that's a traditional drill. I think a lot of guys have had that for a while. What you end up with is your poles kind of focusing on the three guys behind and the three guys wanting to stay behind, you know, in a true 3v2, you know, we actually want all five guys in front of the cage, you know.
Right.
Right. You're only going to be 3v2 for 3 seconds or 4 seconds, you know, in a real game. But for the coaches who want to try it, I think the key is, like Coach said, making sure your third, the add one offensive player into the 3v2 is all the way out there on that hash mark. You know, that line has the tendency in practice to cheat in. And, you know, at that point, it's not really fair to the defense, you know, because you're having those guys come back to the pipe, and next thing you know, that third offensive player is 5 yards to the cage, you know. That would be my only suggestion. And then, again, if you want to run that at the top of the box, that's an interesting option, too. And, you know, we'll run two guys at the top of the box and still keep the third offensive player where you had him, Coach, out by the hash marks.
Yeah.
When we run it
from up top, what we'll do is, again, we're sure, I love the fact that all of our fields that we play on are lined as football, for football, because it kind of gives us another frame of reference. But what we'll do is, same sort of thing, you know, the pick and then how we play a pick up top, we'll manage that. And then you have your third group, that is, you know, off to the side, but we'll tell the guys they can't get below the football 30. So, 10 yards above the goal, football 20. So you can't get below that. So now you kind of got that 3-versus-2 across the top, and it creates a little bit more of a draw and dump ability to play two defensively. You know, if you allow that guy all the way down to go to the goal, it becomes such a large area to have to defend. It really doesn't. I don't think it's as beneficial. So we'll just say, hey, listen, you're going to get a shot. If you get a shot, you can't get a shot below the football 20 or you know, 10 yards above goal line. So you can set cones up at that point and just say, hey, that's where you're stopping. And you still got the numerical advantage, 3-versus-2, but you're defining the space in which they can move in, which puts more of a premium on the stick work.
Yeah, I love that idea, and I think the coaches will also find a byproduct of running that up top and keeping the guy high is we'll run that a lot of times the day before the game if we're playing a team that has three or four great outside shooters. And it gets your goalie a lot of looks at 14-yard, 16-yard shots.
Sure.
You know,
and that's two versus three up top, great zone work. You know,
and
both offensively and defensively, because you're trying to find that those little pockets on the offensive perspective, and then most zones, you know, you're trying to play two, or you're going to play two within your area.
No, good stuff, man. Hey, listen, we're on an hour. I can't believe it.
Wow, how about that? Took me right down the Jersey Turnpike. I appreciate that.
I got a man crush on you, man. So, yeah, from a coaching perspective, you know, I mean, let's just leave it at that. Coach, we still running those camps in July?
We do. We've got the Army Lacrosse Camp is going to be running from July 3rd of 2015. July 3rd. I'm looking them up right now as we speak. So it goes July 3rd. That's a Friday to July 6th, and then we start up the second week, July 7th, right through to the 10th. So right there, you know, great camp, great instructional camp, and no finer place to be than the United States Military Academy, I can tell you that. Just the history that you're surrounded by and the opportunity to kind of be on the sidelines and watch some of the cadet training that goes on is inspirational to me. And I've been doing it for a long time, but to watch those young men do what they do in preparation of serving the country is pretty special.
It's way, way, way above special, man. Special doesn't even come close. And if you've got aspirations about playing at the academy, you know, this is a great place. Go and meet the coaches, get a feel for the way it works. It's not for everybody, but for those that it does fit. You know, it's a life-changing, a life-influencing thing. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Mike, I was at Army Lacrosse Camp for 1983. Dick Adele's last year, I went to Army Lacrosse Camp as a seventh grader. I've come a long ways from there, but it's, I've come a long ways from that guy I was back then, but I can actually still remember a lot of snippets of that. Not necessarily just on the field, but more or less, you know, the experience of being surrounded by a lot of great people.
Yeah, mine wasn't at the academy, but I can remember as a sophomore maybe, and I don't think I ever told you this, I was at a camp with Emmer.
Okay.
And I think I could tell you what the music was even. I remember the music. It was Three Dog Night singing Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. I mean, that's how old I am. That was like the song when we were warming up. Everybody was singing Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. You know? But, you know, the really funny thing about that is that, you know, back in those days, and this is, oh, my goodness, 1972 or 3 or 4, somewhere in there, you know, Emmer was a huge proponent of not sliding from the crease. You know, and believe it or not, you know, I was kind of a crease defenseman. That stuck with me, you know, and for 35 years as a head coach, our primary, I mean, I got to have them all, but our primary slide package has always been adjacent going back to when I was at that camp as a kid. And then it was like, I guess, 6 or 7 years ago or something, right before you came on. How long have you been there, Coach?
This is, I was 2005, 2006 was my first season, so this is my 10th season.
Yeah, this had, oh man, this had to be like 2004 or something. IMLCA, Emmer was doing a presentation that I'm sure one of the cadets put together the PowerPoint with a little thing that was over. But anyway, he was talking about coma slides and crease slides, you know. And I was sitting in the audience with a mutual friend of Coach and I, a guy by the name of Pete Cramblett, Twarden Trophy winner, last national championship team at the academy,
It's not the best, one of the very best to ever wear an Army lacrosse jersey. Probably the very best to ever do it.
I hope I pronounced this right, Tommy Colaferro or something.
Yeah, Tommy Colaferro.
The other attackman that rotated in there was Darby Boyle, Flying Boyle.
Correct. He was the captain of the 69 team, correct, yep.
And Pete and I were sitting there because Pete knew Emmer. I got a chance to spend some time with him socially, afterwards. And I was going, I know you don't remember me, I understand all that. And I was saying, man, I'm still doing it the way you taught it 35 years ago.
Well, there's merits to doing it in a lot of different ways. And you probably have a greater perspective on that than any, just because of your work here, where you're listening to so many different coaches. A lot of different coaches are so successful and have just different ways of doing things believing in your system. And then, more importantly, getting your guys to understand it and execute it at full speed. So,
I started sliding adjacent because I was coaching little teams.
Yeah.
And I don't care, you can talk about stick on the high side, you can talk about footwork, you can talk about pushing out, you can talk about everything in the world, man. But if you got a 5'6", 145 pound middie covering a guy 210 pounds, and that was the reason, that we would jump and trap because we couldn't handle guys, topside especially. And once we started being a trapping team, two sticks on the outside shoulder, make the guy roll back into your teammate. And most of the coaches that know me or have coached against me, it's kind of my thing. I'm known for our traps, but it all came out of necessity. It wasn't a philosophical brainchild. And then if we were sliding, doubling adjacent, when the ball came from X, I was the only coach, I think, that, we encouraged the pole to keep the stick on the low side and that midi would come down. And it would be right into our trap move under the keep it simple, stupid method. I didn't do it.
Sure.
I thought it was philosophically correct. I did it because I didn't want the kids. I wanted them to learn one thing and do it really well. And,
exactly.
I've been blessed with that. That Copperhead team that won the national championship at Dix. That team could trap. Oh my gosh. They were so good at it. But, that kind of thing. Anyway, we caught Coach on a bus ride today. We try and keep these things relatively timeless on the podcast, but Army's having a killer year. Got a great ranking in the USILA. Going down to play their arch rival, and I guess in the spirit of competition, I won't even mention it. I told Coach before, our very first podcast with Coach Tierney was on a bus when he was going down to play Hofstra when he was still at Princeton. So, yeah, this is my second successful bus interview. Coach, my man crush on you continues. You are the greatest thing since sliced bread. You have had such a dynamic impact on our site. The shoulder-to-shoulder 1v1 drill is still something that I get emails on all the time. Coaches love it. The nugget drill, all the stuff we've gotten from you over the years, I can't thank you enough. So, man, you are awesome for coming on with us, even on a bus ride, and I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Coach.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me, and congratulations to you and all your successes with this, and keep it going. You're doing a great job for so many.
Yeah, I mean, we tell so many. What do you think? I don't think, man. If the coaches weren't so willing to share and so open about how they've changed, and your wooden quote is absolutely right on. I mean, Bill Tierney said he had to change practice totally after 35 years of success. Stars just said he hoped that he had enough time in his coaching career to change everything he still needed to change. The bottom line is change, and adaptation and doing a better job of preparing kids. Anyway, I got to let Coach go. This is Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com. Guys, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously. Do your homework. Do your practice plans. Make it fun. Make it engaging. And I tell you what, you're going to win a lot of games. Without further ado, until next time, Last Coach Mike. God bless, everybody.